Hello, I'm Julie Stanford and welcome once again to Essential Business Radio. With me this time to discuss keeping the right financial records for your business are two chartered accountants, Carol Lewis, partner of Bainbridge Lewis, and Charlie Eve, partner at Carpenter Box. I'll start with you, Carol. Tell me why you decided to branch out and start your own practice.
Up until that point in my accountancy career, I'd been kind of tied to a desk doing compliance work, so doing accounts, tax returns, and I was a bit bored of it, to be honest with you. I wanted to get out there and help people in their actual businesses and talk to people about their figures and their numbers. So I set up Bainbridge Lewis with a friend of mine, and the idea is that we're there to help people with more of their financial problems that they have in the business, rather than just doing the year-end accounts and tax returns. So we help a lot of startup businesses with helping them get themselves up and going. You know, should they be a sole trader, should they be a company, should they VAT register, should they set up a payroll, that kind of thing.
So it's more of a partnership, really. You're a partner role rather than someone that a business would go to just at the end of the year, for example.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And we also help a lot of growing businesses as well. So people who are looking to take their businesses on to the next step, who want maybe to get finance, need a business plan putting together or need cash flow forecasting, that kind of thing, really.
Excellent. So, Charlie, over to you. What attracted you to Carpenter Box? I know you went to them, you've been in practice before, but you went to that particular company not that long ago, about a year ago?
Yeah, about a year ago. I was a partner in another firm, and an opportunity arose to go to Carpenter Box. And it's quite a large firm, about 100 employees, so we can deal with bigger clients, audit clients, as well as small individuals and sole traders.
You're also a tax specialist as well, aren't you?
Yeah, because, again, because of the size, we're able to give all the services, sort of corporate finance, specialist tax, tax mitigation services. But what's really attractive is that we're still able to talk to the individual owners themselves. So although it's partner-led, so our clients talk to the partners rather than someone else. So it's not like we see them for the first meeting and then they don't talk to us again. We're still very much hands-on as partners, direct dial numbers, out-of-hours calling.
Right. So I think that there has been quite a sea change in the way businesses work with accountants, haven't there? And hasn't there? And I think that, which is a good thing, because it's a really important role. And I think, you know, there was the joke that all accountants were quiet and sitting in a cupboard somewhere working away with a quill at a desk. And those days are gone, aren't they? So let's think now about, you know, so many businesses, they really struggle with the whole notion of what they need to keep, what they should be doing with the records. And really what I'd like to do is think first about maintaining good financial records for a business. Now, that does sound like quite a dull question, but let's try and make it interesting. So, Carol, no pressure.
Yeah.
What records, financial records, does a business need to keep?
At a really basic level, the first thing I always recommend to my clients is open a business bank account, even if you're just a sole trader, so that you can keep records of all the money coming in and going out on your bank statements. So that's really basic. You want your business bank statements. Then you need to keep records of all your money coming in, so all of your sales invoices, and all of the money going out, so all of your receipts, purchase invoices, that kind of thing. So that's kind of the basic level. Those three things are what you need, and then as your business gets more complicated, you start building on that. And
there's many ways of recording that. Carol's exactly right. Those are the three main things. But you would also, some people say that the paper bag job no longer exists. It does. People will keep all their receipts and they'll put them in a plastic bag and they'll give them to the accountant at the end of the year. And actually, for some people, that's how they want, and that's fine as long as all the records are kept. The bank statements, the bank essentially is the cash side, and the bank side is the lifeblood of the business. So you need to keep a record on that. You need to know what you're doing and how you're doing it. And depending on whether you're a sole trader, partnership or company, which we might talk about later, will depend on the what the relevance is for the bank account and the transactions therein.
So when it comes to thinking about, something a bit more sophisticated than yep. simply... I mean, I understand what you're saying about making sure there's a very clear split between personal finance and business finance.
It's really important.
And when we move up from that point of working from the point of a business bank account, what's going in and what's going out, and simply recording those and keeping the evidence of them. What's the next stage then in terms of records?
The next stage is probably an Excel spreadsheet. Most people can use an Excel spreadsheet, so it's really simple, it's free, and you just need to go and keep, say, one spreadsheet for all of your income coming in, one spreadsheet for expenses going out, and maybe another one for reconciling that back to your bank transactions. So that's the next step up, basically, if you want to keep your own bookkeeping records. Is you know, we recommend Excel. It's the easiest, it's the cheapest. The problem with Excel though is it's sometimes a little bit too flexible, so it's quite easy to make a mistake in Excel. It hasn't got some of the checks that if you go and get some of the more sophisticated bits of software like Sage, QuickBooks, that kind of thing, so it is easy to make errors in, and you probably need to get them checked quite carefully, the spreadsheets.
But you can still use a book.
Oh yes. Yeah.
So, I mean, there are people out there who absolutely hate computers and continue to hate computers. I mean, that's a lot less than it obviously used to be, and we all hope. But yes, you can still write in a red cash
book. Cathedral ledgers, yeah.
And we still get that, and and some people have so much pride in it. It's incredible, and they give you it to you, and it's the neatest thing you've ever seen. And actually, if we receive information like that, then we're still able to analyze it and give useful information and advice from it as if it was an Excel spreadsheet. So we say Excel or computerized just because it's quicker for the client, and that's really what we're trying to do. We're trying to make an admin process as easy as possible, because essentially recording the information for your accounting records is admin in nature.
So it's really the analysis of the money coming in or the money going out that's the important bit. It's not necessarily where they're putting that information. So if it's an Excel spreadsheet or a book, or it's on bits of paper, as long as you've got that information, that's the point. We're saying
definitely.
That people need to have all of that information plus proof of it for you to be able to do your jobs.
Yeah.
So then, however, I'm thinking that's with a sole trader. When we move up to a limited company, what would be different there? I know that they could still do it in an analysis book, but is there a wider need then for records once you start to move to a limited company? Carol, what would you say about that?
It's not necessarily whether it's limited or a sole trader. I think it's more to do with the size of the business. As you get bigger and you get more transactions going on, from a speed point of view and also from the amount of information that you need back out of your accounts, you need to maybe go and invest in some proper software to run it for you. Because if your business gets bigger, you want to, it's not just about what records you need to keep to be compliant, you know, for the revenue. It's about you need to keep sufficient records for your finances so that you can work out if you're profitable, if you're making a loss, what margins you're going on. So at that point, you need to have more detailed information and be able to access it quickly.
Actually, this is a great point for me to flag up another show we've got where the two of you are coming back, and we're going to be talking about using this information that we're recording for good management of the business. So I'm just going to flag that show up because I think that's going to be a good one. And so then thinking about the length of time that these records have to be kept, I know that causes enormous confusion for businesses. With these bags of receipts and their sales invoices and the cathedral book or the Excel spreadsheet, how long do they have to be kept for the revenue? What do they say? 6 years.
Yeah, it's the current year plus 5 years.
Right. And what does that include? What records would they expect to be kept for those 6 years?
So it would be your bank statements, it would be your receipts, and your sales invoices. And if you've got stock, then your stock records to show how you've come to the stock figure at the end of the year.
And what about checkbooks? I know that they're not used as much now, but do you still need to keep checkbooks and check stubs and paying in books?
And paying in books, yeah.
They would be deemed to be, you know, primary records. So yes, anything that you need or anything that basically goes onto your bank statement or your business account or you pay out in cash, that can give evidence of what the payment was, because essentially that's what the revenue would be looking at. They'd be saying, well, there's some money come in here. Where did that come from?
Yeah, so a good point to mention here is some businesses don't raise sales invoices, so you could go and have a shop where they're receiving cash, so you need to keep things like the till rolls for that. Nowadays, with all the website businesses, you want to be keeping like PayPal account prints, you know, so you can see what money's coming through your PayPal account. So I think nowadays, you know, it's not just invoices.
No.
There's a lot of other records that you could use instead of that.
So for instance, you were to have a visit, heaven forbid, from the revenue, I assume that you have to be able to prove everything that's coming in, everything that's going out, so that you can say where it's all gone and where it's all come from for a period of 6 years.
Yeah.
May I ask you one other question, Carol? At Bainbridge Lewis, how would you advise a client when it comes to keeping personal records as well? Is that necessary? Do they need to do that?
You only need to keep personal records of the money that you've received out of the business, so be it your drawings if you're a sole trader or your wages and dividends if you're a director. Also, in any like use of home stuff that you're claiming, you know, for costs of if you've got your office at home, because those would be in your personal name, so your electricity costs, your mortgage interest, that kind of thing. So you'd need to keep those records so that you could back up the use of home claim that you're making off of your business for tax purposes.
Okay, so Charlie, at Carpenter Box, let's think now about virtual records, because I'm going to throw an unusual one here. Things are changing, aren't they? They're rapidly changing, even with the fact that some people are now using online computing software. And what happens with these, in effect, virtual records? How does the revenue view those? What do they expect?
I mean, if all your invoices and records are kept electronically, then that's absolutely fine, as long as you've got a backup of that, and that at some point in time you can get back to those records to for the revenue to analyse, or for you to actually print out onto paper if necessary. So virtual records are like physical records. They have to be held for the same period of time, 6 years, but fortunately they don't take up as much space in your front room or your bedroom or your spare bedroom, wherever it might be.
Yeah, so the same principle applies. Make sure you've either got hard copies or you've got access to your virtual records for that period of 6 years, so that you can prove that flow of money in and out.
Yeah.
I just want to move on then to think about more widely the use of the records, and in terms of customer records and maintaining good credit control, I get asked a lot about what needs to go on your invoice. The first thing I'm thinking about in terms of credit control, what do you actually have to put? What information has to go on an invoice, whether it's a one online, whether it's a printed copy? Carol, what would you advise your clients to put on their invoice?
You need all the obvious stuff. You need your address, your business name, your it's important to go and put your VAT registration number on if you're on VAT registered, you know, the amounts on there. But I think it's also really key to go and say what your credit terms are. So when you're expecting payments, some people give 30 days credit to their customers. Some say, I want payment immediately on producing the invoice. So I think you need to make clear on your invoice what your expectation is about when you want to get paid. A good tip as well is always go and put your bank details on there, so if they do want to go and pay you by BACS, they can do. The invoice, the details are right there on the invoice, and maybe say who to make a check payable to, and also put a contact name and a telephone number on there, so if they had any queries about the invoice, they could quickly call up and get it sorted out, so they haven't got that excuse not to pay you because the details of how to get that query dealt with are on the invoice.
Is there anything else that they have to put on there, or is it really the practical common sense things to facilitate the payment?
As a limited company, you have to put the registered office address
right
at the bottom.
And the registration number?
Yes, and if you're trading, you've got a trading name, which is different from your company name, then the company name should be shown so that someone could go back and look at the company.
So really what it's expected that you should be open and transparent on that official piece of information, really, about your business. Can I ask you another question, Carol? Do you need to have the rate of VAT on there still? I know at one point, if you are VAT registered, you actually had to separate it. Is that still the case?
Yeah, and I think it's really key as well at the moment because the VAT rate keeps changing. Having that rate on there is really important so people can say what rate's being applied to the invoice. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because some services might be zero rated, some might be standard rated, some might be exempt from VAT, and all on the same invoice.
Yeah.
Actually, that makes me think, Charlie, that when you buy something as well, I assume you also need to check that that information is on the receipt.
Actually, quite a good one is if you get a receipt from a supermarket, most of the time they'll have a little star by certain items, and the items that they have a star by are the ones that have VAT attached to them.
Oh.
So look out for that
every day.
On your next trip to any supermarket, that it might be something you haven't noticed before. But when you're keeping records and you're trying to claim back VAT, that's something you should look out for and make a VAT calculation on.
But am I right in thinking that to be able to claim VAT, you do actually have to have the supplier's VAT number on the
on the item? Yeah, have a valid VAT receipt, with their VAT number on it.
Yes, because I think some people miss that.
Yeah.
And it's quite an important point, isn't it? You can't actually legally claim that VAT back unless
Sometimes you get given a pro forma invoice. So you're paying in advance for something, but you can't claim back VAT on that invoice. You have to wait for the valid VAT invoice to be received before you can claim it back.
Actually, that's a good point, Charlie. Do you mind explaining a little bit more about what a pro forma is? Because I remember when I started my business being totally confused by the notion of a pro forma. It seemed to me to be an invoice. I couldn't see how it was different from the following invoice, which replaced it.
I mean, a pro forma invoice happens quite a lot when you're starting up in business. And normally you might be given 30 days credit for something, for a service or for some product. And because you haven't got a credit history, they issue you with a pro forma invoice to pay up front. But because they haven't actually supplied the service or the goods, it's not a valid invoice. So when they actually, so you pay on the pro forma invoice, they get the money, they ship the goods, and then they give you a valid invoice, which where the invoice date ties up to the delivery date.
Right, and that's when
you're allowed to claim.
Right, and it's at that point you can claim it. I see. So if you were cash accounting in terms of the VAT, as in when the money is actually into your bank account and actually leaves it, that would apply.
You have to have the valid VAT invoice.
It's a mine of information, isn't it? I just say, if anyone's actually wanting to find out more, I'm sure I can. If you contact us at essential-business.co.uk, and we'll pass your questions on. So let's think then about what else you need to do in terms of credit control. Mm-hmm. A statement, I would imagine. So once you've billed for the goods and you've put all that information on the invoice, so therefore encouraging them to pay promptly, hopefully by Bax, which is the one we all love, what's the next stage? So supposing that person doesn't actually pay up, what would you then suggest, Carol, at Bainbridge Lewis? What do you all leap into action with?
We usually drop them a friendly email and go and say, I think you've forgotten to pay us. Please find attached the invoice if you've lost it. Please send us payment. The thing is, if they have just one invoice outstanding, usually I would just go and send them the invoice again and say, just in case you've lost it, here it is. But if you've got a customer who owes you a lot of different invoices, then it's quite useful at that point to do a statement, which is just basically a list of all the invoices and how much is outstanding on each of those invoices. And then it's got a nice little total figure at the bottom, so the customer can see exactly how much money they owe. And then, if they'd lost any of the invoices, they can email you back and say, can you send me a copy of this invoice because I don't appear to have it. So those are the two different ways that you can do the first step of chasing.
So it makes sense then to send that statement quite quickly after the last invoice, as it were,
yeah,
for them, for your customer to be able to do a quick check to make sure they have, and they have all those invoices. And I assume it's also good for you because it means that you can then say, but we did send you a statement, if they subsequently say,
yeah,
no, I didn't get that invoice, I don't know where it's gone. Charlie, yeah, what would you advise your clients?
Yeah, I think, I mean, if you're, most people raise invoices at the end of the month, and then they might send out a statement a month later. Well, you should send out a statement 2 weeks after you've sent out the invoice, depending on your credit terms, so that they've got the statement before they're due to make the payment. So the important thing about cash collection and credit control is that there'll be a lot of people at the moment who may even be in front of you for getting the money. So it tends to be the one who shouts the loudest that gets paid first.
Mm.
So I totally agree with what Carol's saying about an email, but if there's no response to that within one or 2 days, then you need to get on that phone and you need to start talking, because it's much harder for someone to speak to you on the phone and try and give you a valid reason as to why they're not paying than it is for an email to come into your inbox and to be shifted to a little folder which says, I'll deal with later,
yes,
maybe 3 months' time.
Yes, this person isn't shouting loudly
That's
enough.
That's right.
This is just a digital
shout.
Right.
It is. I mean, we're all human beings, and you know, you kind of hope that we've all got a conscience, and if we're in business, then we're going to be in the position where we have to chase for money. So, yeah, let's talk to each other and try and get money in as well as pay our suppliers.
The other good tip I'd give on credit control is, if you can, try and get people on standing orders. So say, for example, you've got a customer and they come to you and say, you know, and they go and say, I can't pay you at the moment, I don't have the funds. You can go and say, well, OK, why don't you go and pay me £100 every month for the next so many months until it's paid off? Because that, you know, you'd be surprised how quickly that time goes and it's paid off, where at least, you know, then each month you're getting some money in.
I think that's a good idea, because people, sometimes businesses think it's either all or nothing, don't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, exactly.
And often, I mean, we're saying this as if actually the client isn't wanting to pay, but sometimes they just can't pay, can they?
They just need
and
the time,
so they're looking
don't they?
For a creative way to get around that, or a reasonable partnering way to get around that. So, in terms of credit control, just to really touch on the next stage, just because it's good information to have, because we will all at some point have that challenge of someone who won't pay. What would you do next if that's ignored and they're not coming back to you with a suggestion of staged payments? What would you put that on paper, or would you still be making the phone call, or what's the next stage, Charlie?
I think what you have to do is make sure, if your business is more than one person, then you need to make sure everybody in that business knows that, because the last thing you want to be doing, if they're not paying that, is to be providing additional services. So the account has to go on hold, and make sure that amount that is potential for a bad debt doesn't increase.
Mm.
And then you need to have regular communication and try and find out a little bit more about that business, whether it's just you that they're not paying for whatever reason. And I suppose you have to keep communicating, keep sending out statements, and potentially you might have to take it further and look to try and reclaim that debt via the legal route.
Yeah. So Carol Lewis at Bainbridge Lewis, do you find that your clients struggle with that notion of getting on the phone and being firm? Is it?
Yeah, everyone's really scared about it. It's actually really effective when you do it, because Charlie's quite right. It's the human touch that really works. But everyone's really embarrassed, I think, to call up and say, pay me. Mm. It's a really English thing, isn't it? You know, you're embarrassed to go and ask for the money. And, you know, a lot of people are really reticent about getting on the phone and doing it.
Yes, I think it's a common... Yeah. A lot of businesses say that to me, that they're just a point where they feel like they wish it would just sort itself out, because it's hard to do.
Yeah.
So we're saying, be brave, get on the phone, send the statement, be clear about your credit control.
Maybe schedule in a day to do it once a month, so you can't put it off, because it's really easy to go, oh, I'll do it tomorrow.
Yes,
when you're a business owner and you're the debt collector the owner, the person who makes the sales, you know, and it's just you. That's incredibly difficult. It's much easier if there's another person, or maybe you just bring them in for a period of time, one day a week, one day a month, whatever it might be, because if that person's chasing, you can blame them and say, oh, my credit controller's in, and they're at me because you haven't paid. They're going to be calling you, and blame someone else. So you can still be the friend and have the relationship with the client, but you've got someone else there who's chasing, and then they start to feel, you know, the relationship again. They go, oh, I don't want, you know, Charlie to be in trouble because I haven't paid him.
Yeah.
Oh, let's see what we can do.
That's an excellent tip, because it sort of shifts the blame. Mm. And as you say, you can keep the good relationship with the client while you blame the harridan in the office who's going to ring you up and chase for credit
That's
control.
That's right.
Now, we've not got a massive amount of time left, so let's use the last 5 minutes really to think about then employee records, because this is one area that businesses really struggle with, which is wages, keeping personal information. Carol, tell us a little bit about what, if you're an employer, what records you have to keep about your employees. Pay wages, basically.
I did go and check on the Revenue website earlier, and they go and say there's four things you need to go and keep. There is details of all the payments of wages that you've made to all of your employees, details of all the deductions that you've made from their salaries, details of any benefits they've received, so like company cars or medical insurance, and also details of any like pension or anything else that they've had. So those are the four things. But they don't actually have to be physical bits of paper. It could be all on a bit of software. I mean, the Revenue do give you free software to go and run your payroll, so it could all be on there that all that information is stored.
And I would assume the Revenue would prefer you to do that, because it means they have access to that.
Yeah.
Charlie Eve at Carpenter Box, how would you advise your small business clients to do anything different to that? Would you expect them to do something more than those four items?
Those four items are key for making sure that the correct payments are made to the employees. I mean, you have to have their full name, address, date of birth, national insurance number, and when you're doing the year-end returns, you need all that information, as well as a payroll number for your business. So, yeah, with employees, it's the human side, and they're reliant on the money, because it's the one payment that you have to make each month or each week, because everyone's got to pay their mortgage or rent or buy their food. So so you don't want to get it wrong. So sometimes with that, it's take a little bit of advice up front, and then but doing wages and payroll, you can use the Revenue, and you can get it right.
They are quite supportive, actually, aren't they?
To help you
become a good employer and keep good records.
That's the one side of the Revenue that I really do think they help out.
The friendly side.
Yeah. Mm.
No, I'm going to ask you, I'm going to put you on the spot now, because I like to ask expert guests for a tip. I mean, it's a frustration maybe you have with your clients. What would you love them to be doing, or what do you think they should be doing, Carol?
Just taking more of an interest in their figures. I think there's so many interesting facts about your business to be gained from your figures, looking at them, things like your margins, things like, you know, which customer makes you the most money and this kind of thing. And I find it really interesting when I go and look at my clients' records and start analysing their business. And it's really good for them to start taking an interest in their figures and looking at it as well. You can get to learn some really unexpected things. You know, you spend so much time working in the business that sometimes you don't stand back and have a look at the big picture.
I'm going to hold you to that when you come back to do our show on great tools for planning in business. Quick tip from you, Charlie, before we close.
Keep your records up to date.
Yeah.
Because what's the point? You can't make a decision on information that's a year old.
Excellent.
You need to keep everything up to date.
Brilliant. So on that point of a very firm advice from Charlie Eve at Carpenter Box and Carol Lewis from Bainbridge Lewis, thank you very much for joining me on Essential Business Radio.